You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of September 5th, 2017, and episode number 329. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And this week, we are going to go on quite the journey together. We're going to start off in Chicago. We're going to go to Tennessee. We're going to go all over the world, and then we're going to go out into space. So I hope you got your bags packed, because we're going to go on a fantastic journey tonight. And we're going to be talking about the Chicago Phantom reports a mountain lion and cubs in Tennessee. This would be a major story. MUFON sighting statistics for August, and physicists discover there is no life after death. That's right. And we're going to talk about keeping tabs on Tabby and our fast radio bursts from ETs. We'll also have the book of the week, Conscious Conventions, and who knows what else, maybe a little mischief coming up later on. And this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in a metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics to cosmology to psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Very good school. I spent a few years there, and yes, it's not a diploma mill. You actually have to take classes, and you'll learn a lot of stuff, not just about metaphysics, but about you and where you fit in the world, as well as human behavior and things like that. It's a fantastic course, no matter what you decide to take. I took metaphysics. I didn't expect to take that, but I realized that it provided a very good balance to who I was. So, a lot of content tonight, and I'm going to start off talking about anomalous notes, and it's my show, why not? I'm going to talk about this. My latest book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator, is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and probably a few other places. You can buy it. I still prefer if you bought it through Lulu, lulu.com. You can find that if you go to paranewsinsider.com. And on the front page there, it talks about my little short bio, and it says that I've authored 6 books. You click on that link, it'll take you right to my book page, and you can check that book out. Here on WCJV, it's going to be a busy week. We have a lot of stuff coming up this week. I'm going to cover it a couple of times, so don't worry. I'll set you straight on the programming that's coming up this week, as well as a little bit next week as well. And remind you that WCJV is on iHeartRadio, and I believe we are live on iHeart tonight. So welcome anyone listening live on iHeartRadio. I love you. That's what iHeart means. And iTunes as well. Yes, the Paranormal News Insider by itself is available on iHeartRadio, iTunes, and a lot of other things. But WCJV is paving the path to bring you some of the best paranormal related content, not just to your inbox, but live on all of your devices. And there's an app for that. WCJB also has an app. You can find this in the App Store for Apple products or the Google Play Store for your Android devices as well. And I mentioned some new stuff coming up. I'll mention this briefly and get into it at the bottom of the hour. Thursday, September 7th, new show to the network. The show has been on the air for a little while, but it's new to WCJV, and I'm very excited about the debut of Arcane Radio with Sean Forker, Butch Witkowski, and Lon Strickler. Their first guest here on WCJV will be Timothy Renner, author and researcher of cryptids, Mothman, and Bigfoot. And Friday, September 8th, 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, the premiere of Hot Rod Paranormal Radio with host John Halea. I'll talk a little bit more about these shows, again, like I mentioned, at the bottom of the hour. And I want to talk real quick about paranewsinsider.com. I've updated the events that are listed on there, paranormal conferences and conventions. Updated them earlier today. There's quite a few going on. If I have time later on in the show, just a lot of content that I want to get to. I'll talk about some of the conferences, conventions that are taking place. Some stuff you might want to look out ahead of. And I know right now we're dealing with just dealt with one hurricane down there in the Gulf area. And there's another one approaching right now. Looks to be like it's going to hit the Florida area, and the cruise ship industry right now is scrambling. But there's an interesting paranormal related cruise called the Mysteries Cruise that's occurring November 8th through the 13th, sailing out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, which I've sailed out of there, gosh, I don't, 4 or 5 times. Beautiful area to cruise out of, just north of Miami there. So if you're interested in going on a cruise related with paranormal speakers, I know Rosemary Ellen Guiley is going to be speaking. There's a couple of other people, can't remember off the top of my head, but I just wanted to kind of mention this briefly, and I'll get into this later on if I have time. You can find more information, again, if you go to paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top, it's listed in there. If you want specifically for that Mysteries Cruise, you're interested in going on a cruise in November, mysteriescruise.com. Check it out. And I'll talk a little bit more about these conventions later on in the show. Now, as far as myself, got some stuff going on. I'm going to be on a few shows, a few events coming up in the next few months, rounding out the year. I mentioned Arcane Radio with hosts Sean Forrestrickler and Butch Witkowski. I will be appearing on that show on October 5th. Really excited about that. I think I was on the show a few years ago, but really looking forward to that. And another thing I'm looking forward to, October 23rd at the Westerville Public Library, I will be making my 9th consecutive appearance, actually 10th consecutive appearance. I appeared there earlier this year doing cryptozoology, but I've been there 9 straight years talking ghosts, hauntings, and the paranormal. And Westerville, in case you're wondering, is northeast of Columbus, Ohio. So if you're anywhere in that area, come out and see me speak. It's always a good time. It's a lot of fun. And I always go and visit my books up there, which I think 3 of my 6 books are available. I'll probably be donating my new UFO book to the library this year as well. Let's see. November 3rd and 4th, I'll be speaking at the excavation of Victorian ghosts at Bedford Springs. It's a resort hotel in Bedford, Pennsylvania. This is the place last year I got into a little trouble, decided to go deer hunting with my car. Hopefully that doesn't repeat itself this year. A couple of other radio show appearances coming up a little bit more towards, well, I guess this one's November 6th, Paratalk Radio, November 6th. December 5th, I'll be on the Mallard Report with host Jim Mallard. And again, I'll talk more about those. We get a little bit closer. I don't even want to think about December. Good grief. And last but not least, I want to mention this. I'm not appearing at this as a speaker because I won't have time, but I'm putting on my own paranormal conference, the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, February 17th, 2018. Yeah, I know. I'm crazy. It's February. It's Northeast Ohio. But the good thing is, not a lot of competition, not too many other events going on. And I've been spending a lot of time putting this convention together. You can actually find more information at twinsburgparanormal.com. Again, it's Northeast Ohio, kind of smack dab between Cleveland and Akron areas, about an hour away from the Pennsylvania border. So if you're in that area, general vicinity, you got to come out and say hi. Come out and see these wonderful speakers that are all going to be present. Colin Schneider of WCJV fame here, speaker on Monday night's Crypto Kid Radio. He had the night off. We gave him the night off last night. I think he deserved it. He's going to be speaking at the Twinsburg Paranormal Convention. Audrey Hamilton, who's the one and only guest ever to appear here on the Paranormal News Insider, she's going to be there as well as a speaker talking about the Presque Isle UFO incident that took place back in 1966. Who else do I got there? I'm doing all this from memory. Ronald L. Murphy, good friend of mine. He's probably the furthest person away coming to this, but I just love his presentations. He just puts so much into what he does. He's an excellent researcher, excellent author, lots of books. I've covered a lot of them here on this show. He's going to be talking about vampires. Interesting. Let's see, Brandon Masullo. This guy is highly underrated as far as a speaker here in Northeast Ohio. I've actually been speaking with this guy since, I think, 2008. We actually worked together for quite a while. He's got a very extensive background in the ghost field. He's got a graduate degree in clinical counseling from the University of Toledo and psychological research methods from the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. He's also went to the Koestler Parapsychology Unit at the University of Edinburgh as well, under the supervision of author and international lecturer, Dr. Carolyn Watt. And if you know anything about parapsychology, that's a pretty powerful name. And he's done some work that he's published, and his work has been mentioned by a lot of other people in the field as well. So very valuable speaking. Really looking forward to his presentation. And he's got a new book, which is hopefully I'll have that as the book of the week in a few weeks. I pre-ordered mine. It's called The Ghost Studies, New Perspectives on the Origins of Paranormal Experiences. Highly recommend you do as well. Get your hands on this book. This is, if you're a ghost researcher of any type, you're going to really want to dig into this book. Great stuff. And since it's Northeast Ohio, I wanted to get another guy in the ghost field from this area. And I got Scott Sukel. Scott is the former ghost hunt manager and historian at the Ohio State Reformatory, one of my favorite places to visit. And not only that, but this guy, he's been around longer than I have in this field. He goes back to about 1993, and he and I started out knowing the same people. We lived in the same, pretty much the same area. So always a treat to meet Scott and hang out with him, and really looking forward to him being there as well. He's a great guy, very, very great guy, very down to earth, but he has so much experience in the field. And so you put Scott and Brandon together, those two guys kind of balance everything out as far as the ghost world is concerned. And last but not least, so far I do have another speaker that I've not heard exactly definitive yes, but I'm leaning towards this is going to be, but one of the last speakers that I've definitively said she is going to be there is Amy Boo. Amy Boo is an investigator for the BFRO, which is the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, and she is based here in Northeast Ohio. So really powerful lineup looking at the ghost field, the UFO field, and the cryptozoology field. And my last speaker that I can't mention his name yet because I don't have definitive, he is actually in the UFO field based here in Ohio as well. So really trying to get that Ohio feel. And it kind of hurts because I have so many friends. I have a kind of a small family in Virginia of paranormal researchers, a big family in Pennsylvania that I really wanted to invite a lot of people. But you have to look at it. You know, it's happening in February. The weather could be bad. So I had to make some tough decisions on this to bring together a very good lineup. Only have so many positions here. And I really feel like I left a lot of people out that I really wanted to have here. But it's one of those things. And again, we'll talk. We got a lot of time to talk about this. But again, the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, twinsburgparanormal.com. Check it out. And hopefully I will see you there. I think I clicked off my WCJV. Well, I left the chat room, but I'll be back here real quick. And we're going to get into the paranormal news right now. Well, that's it for the anomalous notes for this week. And we're going to jump into cryptozoology. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about this Chicago Phantom thing. It's been going nuts, crazy nuts, over the course of the last couple of months with so much going on. And when they went public with this, I think a lot of stories started to pop up because of the popularity to this. But it seems like it's kind of cooling off a little bit, which is a good thing. And we'll see how this progresses. But one story this week, we've been averaging like three stories a week. They're still trickling in, I guess, real slow. It just seems like we just got inundated a lot. Now, this story this week, a woman from the western suburb area of Chicago called LaGrange Park called in a report on August 29th about a sighting above Possum Hollow Woods and Salt Creek. The witness is an avid bird watcher, and she was scanning the skies when she noticed what she described as a, quote, huge flying shadow, unquote, that was gliding across the sky. She watched the creature for only moments until it dove down fast into the trees where it disappeared. She described the creature as being 6.5 to 7 feet in height with a wingspan of 10 to 12 feet wide. This is now the 43rd sighting of the Chicago Phantom. But now suddenly the skies have seemed to gone quiet about this creature. We'll see. I'm sure there'll be more witnesses coming forward. And again, if you've gotten the Google map that, that's my conference thing there. If you've got the Google map link that I've used before, you can still utilize that. I'm going to post that in the chat room along with this latest story. And if you go to latest story here, at the bottom of that, that's not working. At the bottom of that has the Google Maps, has all the information you need to follow along with the Chicago Phantom story. If you've not been following it or you want to catch up on it, not a lot of info lately. But again, you can catch up on all these sightings and on the map. It's fantastic because everything is just laid out according to when these reports came rolling in to a variety of different sources, whether it was MUFON, Manuel Navarro, or Lon Strickler as well. So it's all consolidated right there on the map. And like I said, it's getting kind of quiet in Chicago. Still would like to go out there and see what's going on for myself, but keep our eyes in the skies for that one. And a story here, also in cryptozoology, took a very heavy interest in because this could be a very big deal if this is actually true. And I've talked a lot about mountain lions here on the show, off and on, books of the week, and a lot of these stories about mountain lions east of the Mississippi River, which they're not supposed to be, with the exception of South Florida, with the Florida panther. And I think big cats in general are really one of my favorite subjects, but mountain lions, cougars, panthers, catamount, whatever you want to call them. There's 300 different names. These are my favorite cats. I don't know why. I think it's just because of what they've gone through historically and how they're really clawing their way back into, modern history, pun intended. Now, mountain lions were hunted into extirpation in the eastern half of the United States, with the exception, again, of Florida, leading into the 20th century. Now, extirpation, this essentially means they were eliminated from a particular state, not killed off, not extinct, but just extirpated. And in 2011, they were formally declared extinct based on 21 states here in the eastern United States that said they had not recorded one in decades. Now, this essentially meant that the eastern cougar as a distinct species no longer exists, and they're no longer living anywhere east of the Mississippi River, again, with the exception of the Florida panther. But that's not the end of the mountain lion story. Now, you've heard talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And during the 1990s, there began to be reports of wandering males. And in 2011, just 3 months after declaring the eastern cougar extinct, a mountain lion was struck and killed by an SUV about an hour outside of New York City. Again, this was a wandering male that was looking to establish territory. And that's pretty much all these sightings. And, you know, I say the 1990s, but there have been sightings all throughout the 20th century in eastern states. People claim to see black panthers or even just regular mountain lions creeping around, even though they weren't supposed to be here. The sad thing here is eastern United States, it seems like they're doing everything they can to keep the mountain lion from coming back, including putting pressure on South Dakota, which is the closest large breeding population where wandering males seem to come from, and to keep them from moving east. And that's where this lone wandering male came from back in 2011. Now, a story that just recently broke out of Lebanon, Tennessee, which is east of Nashville in north central Tennessee, states that a man recorded a mountain lion and two cubs with a trail cam back on August 27th. Now, yes, there's been a lot of sightings in Tennessee, Kentucky, Missouri of mountain lions in the last decade, maybe two decades. But again, these are wandering males. And this would be huge news if this is true, because this would mean not only a female mountain lion is living east of the Mississippi, but she's also given birth to cubs. That's a huge deal, because that would mean that somewhere in this area, there's an established family, essentially. What also would obviously mean a male is living in the area, which isn't a huge surprise, since this area has had a number of confirmed sightings over the years. And confirmed meaning that the state agencies have agreed that the information, whether it's a photograph or a track, has been validated by experts. Now, WGNS Radio, based in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, carried the story, which is centered on Jim Coots, who lives at the KOA campground in Wilson County. He discovered signs of what he felt were a cougar behind the campground. Now, I got this story, I forget what day, I think it was on lunch at work. So I'm looking on my cell phone, and I was a little confused when I first viewed the video on my cell phone, you know, a little, tiny little screen here. The cats I saw did not look very much like mountain lions, despite the claim of the camera owner. Now, viewing the video on my computer, I quickly realized, sadly, these were not mountain lions, but were in fact bobcats. Bobcats have a unmistakable patch of white in the center of the back of their ears. And as soon as I saw that, I knew these were not mountain lions. So a patch of white in the center with black on the top, black on the bottom. And mountain lions have solid color backs of their ears, usually black. But younger cats, it'll be kind of tawny-ish, the tan color. But the bigger sign is the lack of a long tail. That's definitive. Bobcats are named bobcats for their small tail. And this is exactly what these three cats are showing in the video. Not a long tail. With the mountain lion, that tail is like pretty much almost half the length of the body if you were to cut it off. It's very long. Now, during the radio interview, Mr. Coots explains what he saw. He says, quote, "It looks like a cougar. I can't positively say it can't, or I should say, I can't positively say it is, can't positively say it isn't." So despite the headlines, he doesn't really seem very sure either way, although he is convinced the animal is too big to be a bobcat based on where the adult is standing next to a tree. So it's really the size of this animal that has him believing it's not a bobcat versus it is a mountain lion. But again, he doesn't seem very definitive one way or the other. And he also states that he's trapped bobcat before, as well as a lot of other animals, and they are a lot smaller than what he perceives in the video. And it's really hard to tell in the video size because, again, you're just looking at a little trail. You're looking at trees. There's really not a whole lot of scale, but they don't really look all that big to me. And if you do read the story during the radio interview, the host also says that mountain lions grow to 800 pounds. Not even close. That's huge. I mean, that would rival tigers, which are the largest of the big cats. Not lions. Tigers. Male mountain lions grow to about 200 pounds, give or take, on average, and females around 120 pounds, again, on average. 200 is still kind of pushing it for these cats. There's a lot of a little bit of misconception as to how the mountain lions became extirpated in this interview and where the ones in Tennessee are coming from, as well as when the mountain lions are active. They say the interviewer says that they're just night animals, so the guy doesn't have to worry about them during the day, which is not true. They are described as nocturnal, but they are also known as being crepuscular, which means active at dusk and dawn, very similar to deer. You'll see deer moving early in the morning as well as at night. But deer also kind of fit that category. You can see a deer out in the middle of the day as well. And that's the same thing with mountain lions. There's plenty of video that show mountain lions out during the day. And if you're in the chat room, I'm going to give you a little bit of a extra, I guess, on this. Kind of a photograph, kind of just to describe what I'm talking about, or to kind of show you what I'm trying to describe here with the cats. The Tennessee video, I've taken a couple of clips here, and I've put them there on the left, and they're obviously black and white, and you can see the ears on a little baby cub walking away, and it matches that of a bobcat. And right next to the bobcat picture, you see a cougar's ears, which are black in the back. And you can also see the size of these cats next to each other. And also the black and white still that shows the stubby little tail with the black tip on it that matches that of the bobcat. And the little baby bobcats, the little cubs, they have the black tail, and it gets a little lighter as they get older. And mountain lions, they actually will kind of look like cubs when they're babies, when they're little cubs. They have the little patterns on their fur, but they lose that as they get a little older. But yeah, got all excited about that, but it's not true. And real quick, I'm going to share with you the book of the week. It fits in with cryptozoology, and it's a book that I just got a couple of weeks ago at an event, and was really excited to read this thing. I really wanted to kind of get through this. I think it's a wonderful concept. It's a wonderful book. And I picked this up at August 5th. So it's been exactly a month. I got this at the 5th annual Strange Encounters event in Pennsylvania in Johnstown earlier this year. And just really wanted to read this book. And I don't know. It's an interesting concept. And what they've done here, this book is called A Wish for Giants. And it's authored by Aaron Dunbar. And what he's done is he's combined a kind of a charitable thing with it's kind of hard to explain here, but it's kind of combined the fiction of Bigfoot with the kind of the reality of the Wish, the Wish Foundation for the for kids, for children who are undergoing traumatic injuries or diseases or things. And unfortunately, a lot of times this is their last wish. So they wish for something that if they could see anybody, meet anybody, go anywhere, do anything through the Make-A-Wish Foundation, they try to grant their wishes. So a lot of times, unfortunately, it is sadly their last wish. And so Make-A-Wish does whatever they can to fulfill these wishes. And in this particular book, the wish of this little girl is to meet a real live, genuine Bigfoot. And it might sound a little ridiculous, and they kind of point that out throughout the book, but it's really interesting, this journey. And I kind of, I don't want to be too critical of this book. It's a huge book. because of what they do here. It's like 350 pages. It's a pretty thick book, but it reads really, really fast. Some of the pages, it's like text messages, and the font is spaced out quite a bit so that you can read through this pretty fast, even though it's 350 pages. And you really can't expect to have a whole lot of depth in these characters and a lot of different things going on. But it's the concept of the Make-A-Wish Foundation and Bigfoot combined into this particular story. And there is a few parts that are very emotional because of what this girl is going through, as well as what certain people that appear in this book. Bob Gimlin makes an appearance in this book at Ohio convention, which is pretty cool. And the book takes place essentially in Southwest Pennsylvania, where Aaron Dunbar lives. And he's gotten a lot of great feedback on this. And it's actually going from a book to a movie. So this book idea is going to be – is actually – I think they're done filming now. And it's going to be coming out sometime next year as a movie. So I'm really excited about that from reading this book and kind of getting to enjoy the characters. And it's – I mean, it's fairly predictable, but it's not. You're not sure what exactly is going to happen toward the end of this book. So he does a really good job of kind of twisting your thoughts as to what's going to happen with this. And I've shared the Amazon link for the book in the chat room, and I'm also going to share with you the link for the actual the book and the movie and what they're doing and their appearances and everything. And you can find that at awishforgiants.com. So anything going on with this story, as well as the movie, it's supposed to be out next year, sometime in 2018. And hopefully if I get more updates, I'll share that with you as we get closer to this. So A Wish for Giants by Aaron Dunbar is your book of the week this week here on the Paranormal News Insider. And with that, it does bring us to the bottom of the hour. And I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And let's see, Crypto Kid Radio Show. No show last night, but I'm very, very excited about this. Next week, next Monday night, Benjamin Radford is going to be the guest. I am pumped about that. I love Ben and his work and all the stuff he's done. Yes, he's a skeptic. He's very skeptical, but he's a very grounded skeptic, and he's not going to just throw science and hit you upside the head with it. If you do your work and you do it correctly, he will praise you for it. It's just you got to work for it. And he's done a lot to help me figure things out over the last few years, and has kept me grounded and kept me realizing a lot of things that I've been thinking all along I've actually write about. So love his work, love his books, and I'm really looking forward to this interview. I've had a chance to interview him myself and talk to him quite a bit. Great guy. Looking forward to that. But you got a few days before that. Tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, September 5th, Chris DeCesare and Phil Casey will present Surviving Evidence, and their guest will be author and criminal investigator Mark Keyes. Again, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. And, wow, this is insane. We got another show, another new show, two new shows this week, I should say. But tomorrow night, can't forget about Kat. Wednesday night, you can catch Paranormal Experience with host Kat Hobson as she talks with Emilia Pisano. Kind of a paranormal bouquet with her. You're going to want to check that show out as well. Paranormal Experience with host Kat Hobson tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern. And again, like I mentioned earlier, Thursday, September 7th, the debut of Arcane Radio with Sean Forker, Butch Witkowski, Lon Strickler, with their guest, Timothy Renner, an author, researcher on cryptids, Mothman, and Bigfoot. And I also mentioned, don't forget this one, bookmark this one as well, Friday, September 8th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, the premiere of Hot Rod Paranormal Radio with host John Halea. His guest will be intuitive and clairvoyant Linda Williamson. So a very action-packed week right here on WCJV. A couple of new shows, and my show and two shows on Tuesday, I guess. So if you're not keeping up with us, you're going to fall behind real quick. And next week is a full slate of shows with Colin coming back. I can't even keep track of this anymore. This is insane. Lots of great stuff going on here, right here on WCJVradio.com. So if you're not listening into this network, you are missing out on some fantastic shows. And with that, we're going to jump into UFO news. So be prepared. We're going to outer space. And I'm going to be talking about the Mutual UFO Network. And I know they've had some trouble lately. But I'm not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about their sighting statistics for August of this year, 2017. It is September, so we reflect back on the prior month. And I don't know. I've been having some issues with this lately. I don't know what's going on. Last month, I was way off in my prediction once again, as the sightings, I don't know. I think overall, they seem to be very unpredictable as to the amount of sightings that are going to be turned in. Now, for the month of July, I predicted 604 total worldwide sightings, with 436 in the United States. However, MUFON reported 785 worldwide reports, with 593 occurring in the U.S. So, yeah, I was way off. And I guess the last time I was close looking at this, back in April. But since then, it seems my informed predictions are more like just random guesses. For the month of August, I was a little bit better with the worldwide prediction. I guessed 674 worldwide sightings, and MUFON reported 821. It sounds like a lot. I guess it is a lot. So I was a little shy on my prediction again. It's actually mathematically a little closer than it was the month prior. Now, typically, the numbers slump just slightly going into July, from July to August, at least according to 2016 and 2015 numbers. However, 821 sighting reports is actually the most reports turned into MUFON in any single month since October of 2015. So, you know, I had kind of reason to be off, I guess. This is kind of unexpected. And back in October of 2015, when 992 sightings were reported, and 2015, this was a record-breaking year. And there were just over 1,400 sightings in June of that year. I believe that is their high water mark, I think, of all time, if I'm not mistaken, in any single month. I had predicted 593 U.S. sightings, which is exactly the same from the month prior. I don't know why. Maybe I wasn't paying attention or just reading off that number. But I don't know. It would have matched that 593. I was a little too low on this as well, as MUFON reported 623 reports from the United States. Not that far off. I was still off. Canada was second with 49 reports. United Kingdom next with 43. Australia had 11, Brazil and France had 7 each, Germany and Portugal had 6, and Spain, Mexico, and India had 5 reports each. 36 more countries turned in reports, but 24 of those only turned in 1 report each. And now we'll look at the state breakdown of the 623 U.S. reports. California, as always, was number 1 with 83 reports. Texas was second with 53, Florida had 30, Ohio had 28, Illinois and New York had 25 each, Arizona and Oregon had 24 each, Pennsylvania had 23, Tennessee and Michigan with 22, Washington 19, that's Washington State, Missouri and Colorado had 16 reports each, Georgia had 15, Massachusetts and New Jersey had 14 reports each, North Carolina and Indiana had 12, and Kentucky and Idaho had 11 reports each. And I'm not going to do the rest. There were 28 more states plus the District of Columbia that turned in less than 10 reports each. And in case you're wondering, the District of Columbia turned in three reports. And again, none were actually reported on the front lawn of the White House. Maybe on the roof, but not the front lawn. And looking at this, I like to do the per capita breakdown. And this is essentially looking at each state population, looking at the number of sightings, dividing that by the state population, multiplying that by 100,000. So that gives you an idea of how many sightings per 100,000. So it kind of gives you a different look at these numbers, where these particular states rank versus just saying, well, California is number one. Well, of course they are, because California has the largest population of any state in the United States. And looking at overall U.S. Population with the number of sightings for this month, it's at a 0.202. So 0.2 of 100,000 people reported a UFO in the United States. Not all that exciting. Very statistically insignificant, really, when you look at it standing back. So probably why MUFON doesn't really dig into these numbers. But again, it kind of gives you an idea of what state might have been hot for these reports versus other states. And with California being number one in state population, they turned in a 0.211 with their whopping 83 reports. But again, that is still slightly over the U.S. average of 0.202 for this month. But we look at Ohio. Ohio is seventh in population, and their per capita was 0.241 with their 28 sightings. Arizona, with their 14th in population, their per capita number was 0.356. So they had 24 sightings. And my winner for the month, I'm going to go with this, Oregon, the 27th most populous state in the United States, finished with a 0.604. So well over half a person per 100,000 people, or you could say 1 in 200,000 people reported a UFO in the state of Oregon with their whopping 24 sightings, which really isn't bad, actually. Idaho, which is 39th in state in the U.S. population, turned in a 0.673, which is a larger number than Oregon, but they only had 11 sightings. So I'm going to go with the big O on this one. Tennessee, the 16th state in population, turned in a 0.331 with 22 sightings. Colorado, number 21 in state population, 0.289 with 7. And District Columbia, if they were a state, it would actually be 49th in population, very small area. Its population estimated at 681,000 plus. Their per capita breakdown with 3 sightings would be 0.440. So that's actually pretty decent compared to these other ones. And Alaska, 48th most populous state with a 0.407 with 3 sightings. New Hampshire, the 42nd most populous state with a 0.377 with 5 sightings. And South Dakota, the 46th most populous state with a 0.352 with 3 sightings. Now, again, these are fractions. So 0.3, 0.352, is obviously less than one. And, you know, that's again based on 100,000 people per capita. So it's like a guy's arm reported a UFO sighting in South Dakota. Now my prediction for September. This is a big deal. I've been way off. So I don't know. I'm just throwing darts today. I'm not going to be close. I'm just going to throw a number out there. I'm going to say total worldwide reports, 768, and I'm going to go with 580 for the states here, United States. And big thanks to Audrey Hamilton for this month's sighting statistics. Again, she is going to be at the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference taking place February 17th, 2018 in Twinsburg, Ohio. Looking forward to that. Can't you tell? Now, ghost news. I have some bad news here. Might want to get a hanky. Everything's going to change right here tonight. I'm going to throw some honesty out here. I'm going to be real with you guys. love me or hate me. I just listen to the show. You can hate me, but still listen to the show. But I'm going to be real with you. I'm going to be honest. Ghost groups and enthusiasts of ghosts all over the world. And I've talked to people for it's over 20 years now, and I hear this a lot. A lot of people speculate what they think ghosts are, which is fine. There's no problem in speculating. But a lot of people like to use physics and laws of science to explain ghosts, to kind of validate their points and say, this is what ghosts are, and I can prove that because of this and that. I'm not a big fan of that. Now, some say the law of thermodynamics, which states that energy cannot be created nor destroyed, validates their opinions because, hey, ghosts are energy, right? And if energy can't be created nor destroyed, that proves ghosts exist. That's it. It's that simple. Well, no, it's not that simple. You can't oversimplify something that's based on a larger thing here. And this is actually the first law of thermodynamics. And there is a second law that's kind of puts things in a little bit more perspective, you know, other than the elementary level of energy cannot be created nor destroyed. That's the very simplest thing. But that sets up the second law, which basically states, kind of in a summary here, that energy goes from useful forms to less useful forms. One example I like to give is that gasoline. You put gasoline in your car, it powers your car, but that energy from the gasoline is diluted from road friction on the tires to the wind on the car to gravity pulling down on the car, as well as the pistons and, you know, all the internal things moving because of the explosions of gasoline. That heat is produced, and that heat is kind of more or less wasted energy. So all of that energy is not used into moving the car. A lot of it's lost. It's not destroyed, but it's just not used correctly. And you know, when you're talking about, won't go into the whole death process, but kind of to grimly state that for us to go from essentially, I don't know what you call us, I guess a walking meat sack, and that's pretty much the only way I can kind of describe it, to a free-floating, undetectable, sentient being, I think that's going from a useful to less useful. No, I don't think so. I would rather be a free-floating, sentient being instead of encasing this meat carcass thing that I'm walking around in. I know that sounds gross, doesn't it? I still got to eat dinner. I don't know. It just seems if we're going to be at a higher level, that kind of goes against physics. And I've always said that it's we can't prove it by throwing our own personal things up against the wall, hoping that they stick. I don't know. And one example that scientists always use is that you can't unscramble an egg. If you could unscramble an egg, the universe would pretty much turn itself inside out. Now to the story. Now that I've irritated a few people, I hope you haven't turned this off yet. Well, if you have, you wouldn't hear me say that. Dr. Sean Carroll, a cosmologist and physics professor at the California Institute of Technology, has taken the physics debate to the extreme and has pronounced that life after death cannot exist because physics says so. Now, he says, quote, claims that some form of consciousness persists after our bodies die and decay into their constituent atoms face one huge, insurmountable obstacle. The laws of physics underlying everyday life are completely understood, and there's no way within these laws to allow for the information stored into our brains to persist after we die, unquote. That's not me. That's Dr. Carroll talking. Now, Dr. Carroll looks at the quantum field theory, which basically states that there is one field for each type of particle. Now, he says that if life were to continue after the death of the body, these forces would have been discovered. He says, quote, if it's really nothing but atoms and the known forces, there is clearly no way for the soul to survive death. Once we get over any reluctance to face the reality on this issue, we can get down to the much more interesting questions of how human beings and consciousness really work, unquote. And it's interesting because I covered a very similar story, and that's why this kind of got my attention, is that this is essentially the same claim made earlier this year by physicist Brian Cox, as he stated that there's no room in the standard model of physics for a substance or medium that could carry on our information after death and yet go undetected by the Large Hadron Collider. So now we have theories of physics and the Large Hadron Collider telling us that the afterlife doesn't exist. It's kind of depressing. So does Dr. Carroll see after-death studies as a distraction to the search for consciousness? I mean, you know, I like to take kind of the middle ground here, and it seems like he's way out here on one end of the argument. And the funny thing here is not even physics can explain what is happening with consciousness. And despite our ability to reason and come up with theories and hypotheses, we still cannot define consciousness other than our ability to be aware or to understand or to reason or even to be ignorant about what other things exist out there. Now, I do agree to some extent with Dr. Carroll. We cannot explain consciousness, nor can we explain what might happen after death, since we do not yet understand how this higher functioning works outside of electrical impulses and reactions to our environment. And despite his claims, science does not have all the answers to the world as we know it. No, that'll never happen. As long as we're discovering things, and as long as we're continuing to do research, look out into the stars, discover new things here with the Large Hadron Collider, and I know people don't want to hear this, but there's an even bigger particle collider coming soon. And I know a lot of people just flipped out when they heard that. Don't worry. It's not going to be the end of the world. It's not. It's not. Calm down. It's, I don't know. We don't have all these answers yet. And that's why we're continuing to do research and we're continuing to look at new things. And physics, it's really and truly, when you break it down, it's just a series of theories that are just the best guess until new evidence presents itself. I mean, yeah, some of these are pretty solid and you can't argue them. They're, you know, you can't say it's just a theory, because theories are pretty heavily, known. But when you're getting into physics, there's a lot of wiggle room with some of these particular theories that exist out there. And a lot of them really are just, again, guesses. Now, yes, some of them are pretty much an everyday part of our lives, and there's no way to challenge those. And lastly, I just want to say it's easy to believe without question, just as easily as it is to dismiss without introspection. You can quote me on that one. Again, I'm trying to take the middle stance on this. I see what he's saying, and I get it. I've had the same discussion or potentially argument with people as well about the physics proving or science proving that ghosts exist. That's unfortunately quite the opposite, but we have to continue looking at different things out there. New situations, new findings, new things coming out, new ways of looking at the brain and the mind, which are two separate things. We can't expect that the answers are already here. We have to continue to do our work out there in the field, so that one day when science does find something in a lab, they can look at us, those out in the field that are not being fooled by EMF detectors and different things, the tools and tech. The people that are really trying to figure out these answers on the other end, we can kind of help each other out and put all this stuff together. But no sense of getting all, I don't know, wishy-washy here, Dr. Carroll, telling us that we're wrong. That's just your opinion. Now, in other news, real quick, couple stories here I want to share. These kind of go out into outer space, not specifically paranormal stuff, but they kind of border on some stuff here that I've heard a lot of rumors and a lot of discussion on conspiracy-based message boards and UFO and alien message boards. And it's getting a lot of press. And the first one here is about Tabby's Star. It's also known as KIC 846-2852. Don't bother writing that down. This has been in the news since last year when it was reported that this particular star has been dimming at an extremely high rate. And it's been kind of dimming and kind of brightening up, very unpredictable patterns. And many UFO and conspiracy websites, again, were quick to chime in, stating that this was proof, definitive proof. I don't know how, but that's what they said. And they sounded just like that, too. They said proof of an alien megastructure, or what some were calling a Dyson swarm, around this particular sun in order to harvest energy. However, scientists, I know there's that S word again, have been working feverishly to figure out why the star is dimming and sometimes becoming brighter. One team states they discovered the star is dimming faster in short blue wavelengths, quicker than in infrared ones that are longer. So this, in essence, points to a very small object blocking the light from our vantage point. In other words, they suggest the dimming is caused by dust particles, which would make sense. There are still other suggestions, including unusual brightening and dimming for a host of other reasons. And new research papers will be coming out in the coming months with more observation time. This mystery will continue to dwindle down to a few potential explanations. And I think all those are going to go with not aliens, no aliens. I think those are pretty much all wiped out at this point. A lot of work being done on this. And let me throw that link in the chat room real quick. And if you're not listening live in the chat room, I am posting some links and other information into the chat room that you might be missing out on. But if you do follow me on social media, these links I will be putting out during the week, kind of spread out throughout the week. I'm not going to inundate you with every single story tonight or tomorrow, kind of spread out through the week, just so you're getting a little bits of pieces of information throughout the week. And another story, out of this world story, this has been getting a lot of press lately as well. Fast radio bursts. They've actually been in the news for years, but it's been getting a lot of attention in the paranormal as of late. Fast radio bursts were discovered in 2007 from data reaching back to 2001. Now, FRB 121102, sounds like a Star Trek thing, doesn't it? Discovered on November 2nd, 2012, hence the 121102-12-1102 name, is the only fast radio burst signal to repeat. And with very few signals detected since then, the number of FRB detections has skyrocketed. Now, it's funny because I read some stories and they say only 30 have been detected. That's not even close. It's skyrocketed to over 150. And FRB 121102 emitted 15 more bursts as detected by the Breakthrough Listen Project, utilizing the Green Banked Telescope in West Virginia. And Breakthrough Listen is a SETI project. And SETI stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And if you're into UFOs and you're into alien stuff, some people are kind of offended by this because they're searching deep space. They're not searching in our own galactic neighborhood. Some people don't like that. They think that's a silly effort to investigate instead of search for extraterrestrial intelligence. But so far, scientists are not sure what causes these extremely short yet extremely powerful signals. And one thought is that these are just pulsars, which are a highly magnetized rotating neutron or white dwarf star. And they spin pretty much. Or a potentially a magnetar, which they don't get as much press for, as cool as a name as they have. A magnetar is pretty much the same thing as a pulsar, but they have a much stronger magnetic field. However, since pulsars and magnetars emit X-ray fields, and X-ray fields have not been detected from the source of the FRB 121102, scientists are actually doubtful that these stars, the pulsars or a magnetar, is actually responsible for these at all. So that kind of leaves things wide open. What's going on? And you may wonder, this is kind of hard to really put into perspective, but you may wonder, how powerful are these bursts? Well, these detected from FRB 121102 have been detected as coming from a dwarf galaxy located about 3 billion light years away. Billion with a B. That's far. That is not in our galactic neighborhood, not in our solar system, not in our universe. It's pretty far away. It's also thought that these bursts are the result of collisions of black holes or other cataclysmic events. But as the collection of fast radio bursts, or actually Lorimer bursts, as they were first called, continue to pile up, speculation is turning toward dissemination, and the answers are not becoming much clearer. Thus enter the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Of course, if scientists can't figure it out, aliens, right? Now, some may laugh at the prospect that these super strong and quick signals in space are caused by aliens. It kind of doesn't make sense. But a paper published in January of this year titled Fast Radio Bursts from Extragalactic Light Sails is a serious effort by astrophysicists who feel the characteristics of these bursts may be artificial in origin. So are these bursts leakage from planet-sized transmitters powering interstellar probes from distant galaxies? Well, probably not, but scientists are beginning to accept the possibility that there could be advanced life forms out in space. Possible? Could be? Nah, we'll see. Granted, we would have to understand, again, given the distance of these signals that they were emitted, there was only single-celled life here on Earth 3 billion years ago and was a billion years shy of the first multi-celled organisms here on Earth. 3 billion years, that's a long time ago. That's when these emissions were made. Even though they're super powerful, super short, the message still takes time to travel through space. Again, laws of physics apply everywhere. We can't bend them, break them. Only in movies and books, I guess. So 3 billion years it's taken for these signals to reach planet Earth. And a lot has changed here, and I'm sure a lot has changed where they've come from as well. So if it wasn't an advanced race, they could be gone by now, really. And even if we were to launch, again, another signal towards them, if they were advanced races, it'd take another 3 billion years for signal to hit them. So that's a long time. Wow. And another major issue is that these fast radio bursts have been seen in many other places in the sky at great distances between each other, which brings the alien hypothesis down to a very small percentage of possibility. How could it be happening all over the place at the same time? But then again, we honestly just don't really know. We have no clue. We have no idea. But it's interesting, you know, when people say, well, I don't understand, what does this space stuff have to do with the paranormal? Well, yeah, there are a lot of people that are starting to look at the extraterrestrial hypotheses, intelligent life out there, as very potential logical explanations for what's going on. And that should be exciting to people, because, you know, even 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it would have been laughed at. And they still make fun of UFOs in, you see a local UFO sighting and you already know that your local news is going to play the X-Files theme, and they're always going to snicker and laugh when they talk about this at 11:29 when the news goes off at 11:30, and they're going to mention it and kind of scoff at it and laugh. But it's interesting because a lot of these, at the end of that, they're kind of like looking at each other like, well, what if? And that's kind of where we're at here with science, is saying, well, what if? What if there's something more to this? And that, my friends, is your Paranormal News Insider for the week. And big thanks to Cindy, my producer. She's got her hands full this week. Like I mentioned, there's a lot of stuff coming up this week, some new shows. Second week for one show tonight, and a couple new shows later on this week. Going to be a long week, even longer next week with Colin coming back. Big thanks to Dita, and good to see Paul back in the chat room once again. everyone else out there, no matter where you're at tuning in tonight. And remember, you can listen to the Paranormal News Insider and the rest of WCJV Digital Broadcasting Network on the WCJV app, available on Apple and Android devices, where you can download the app in the App Store or get it on Google Play. Depends on what you own. I'm not an Apple fan, sorry. WCJV, again, can now be found on iHeartRadio. You might be listening to us live right now. And on iTunes, and is also available through SoundCloud, MixCloud, YouTube, and many other podcast apps. So that being said, I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.